any areas that are gone that you remember or that you are?
No, in fact, I would suggest that we have more areas. Mm-hmm. I think they caught on to it and they become more concerned about the. In 1972, we from the park, and I was instigator to establish a stream preservation bylaw.
Mm.
So all the streams in Burnaby. And they didn't go well with the developers because all the streams that said they'd have to be protected, they could not be changed in their meandering, and the stream would have to be a thing. And that was quite a discussion about that. And finally, they did implement it. And it's in fact, recently they just put a big stream naming contest in Burnaby, and they're going to put out a new map again for Burnaby.
Now, how about fish populations in these streams? Some of them are fish.
Well, when I first came here, there was lots of fish, but there were always, whenever I went to a creek, Stony Creek was one of them, and the other creek that runs into Burnaby Lake, Eagle Creek, I'd go down there and... sometimes where there was a little bend and there was a wash, and there'd be thousands of little smolts, all dead, you know. They would be they'd be swirling around there, be all dead by the time they got down to the certain depth that they were. So they got poisoned somewhere along, or the water stopped there and it was poisonous already. Because people used to dump, developers especially, they'd dump everything into the creek, you know, their solvents, everything was dumped in there. And Burnaby Lake itself had a... businesses on there, like trucking companies who washed out their tankers and everything right into the, not directly into the river, but it seeped in there because they'd have their big septic tank type of thing that was allowable then, but that all seeped into Burnaby Lake. Yeah. So the fish would all die in there, and the only time I saw that there was some life there when they dredged it in the 1972, when they dredged it, that I saw hordes of catfish chopped up and turtles.
Oh yeah.
So I said, "There's more life here because the catfish were big, you know, and they were chopped up by the dredging machine, and it was all over, you know, to just a flotsam of." So I said, "Gee," but then again, you're talking about fish that has doesn't need much oxygen, you know. They're able to come up and breathe.
Well, some of these are salmon streams, or at least they still
create. Oh, all of them were prolific from old timers, like this Mr. Hackwell thing. These used to be Japanese gardens along Steel Creek, because the Japanese used to, and even when I come here, there were still rhubarb farms that was abandoned by the Japanese, but there were still lots of rhubarb, because they used to go down to the Steel Creek because the fish would come up and want to find their little streams, but the sole lack of oxygen, by the time they got to certain places, they would literally die. So the farmers used to go down there and fork them on their wagons and use them as fertilizer.
Mm.
Great gardening fertilizer that was. And they said it used to really reek. The old man said when the fish are running, the stream would really reek, you know, dead fish all over the place. And they used to, everybody went down there at their wagons to get the fish for fertilizer.
Now some of the streams, though, now salmon are coming back, are they not?
Yes, they're coming back, yes. But with a lot of help from... Al Rudolph was a great one, a great man. And the man that you should get in touch with, Alan Rudolph, and he's to do with the Brunette River and bringing up the fish and having the fish ladder and all those sorts of things. And he's been working at it for about 45 years.
Hmm.
Yes, he was one of our great instigators. See, he took a lot of people who had specialty concerns, you know, and therefore we said, well, to have Burnaby Lake as a healthy place, you have to have healthy streams. To have healthy streams, you have to have development in such a way as to protect the streams. We can't have pathways and people, dogs running in the stream. I said, can't have that. And the stream is there and its pathway is near there. Why can't you? I said, well, because they walk in it, they disturb the fish, who knows, they stand on the fish eggs, you know, and dogs in there, and later on, just garbage gets put in there.
Hmm.
But now I'm really pleased with the stream way the city itself is concerned about the streams and is protecting its streams. But we have had a good engineer there, Mr. Lambert Chu. You know, he was a city engineer and as an environmental engineer to boot. So he would he was good.
Well, it sounds like that in Burnaby's post-war period that there was a couple of decades where people weren't very concerned about conservation type things.
Oh, they just moved the mountains. Burnaby, Brentwood example is there's a big hill there. You just literally have to climb up from Lougheed. It was a big hill, straight up. And they literally carved that all off, and they hauled it all over to Burnaby Lake, and that's where the Dairyland is now.
Really?
And everything, they put it on there. In fact, you'll see that Sperling, when it goes, all of a sudden makes a little bit of a dog's leg, because all that fill there pushed the street and everything over. So all that was hauled day and night there, went for months and months, day and night, they hauled all that dirt away and filled in, and of course that's when they developed Brentwood there. And then they went on with the development of houses, you know, they went day and night there pounding the nails. And they wanted to do the same thing to the ravines.
Fill them in.
In South Burnaby, one alderman had a great idea. They could fill it all in. We'd get paid for it because all the till from Vancouver and all this commission, and then we could put a highway on it. And on Sundays, you could have a drive there and have a good view to boot, you know. Just drive around and look at the view.
Hmm. And it sounds like the early 70s was a bit of a turning point when stronger conservation.
People could afford a bulldozer now, or rent a bulldozer, and or somebody with a bulldozer. And that's the way all of Deer Lake, the slope going down to Deer Lake here, was all developed, is the fact that bulldozers were able to go in there and level off benches, you know, and dig out the basements. Other than that, you know, to dig out a basement, I remember this one house here, it had 200 yards in it only, which is not very much, because it's not a very deep basement, only 36 inches or something at the deepest end. And, you know, five men with wheelbarrows working for 2 weeks. As where, you know, now with an excavator, you just go in there in a matter of hours and it's all done and gone. So with a big machine, big machinery, that was, that killed it all. But mind you, they did a lot of damage with horses in the olden days. Mind you, killed a lot of horses too, but... like you take Holdem and Beta and all that. The old man by Skill Creek told me about when they were building those streets. I mean, that's a steep grade there, 10-12% grade. And they did it with horses. And he said, going uphill with a load with a horse, he says, whipped them hard until they collapsed, or you couldn't go downhill with it because it was brakes, you know, were not very good on wagons. So.
Let me ask you about air as well. When you moved in, what was air quality like?
Oh, air quality, for instance, you couldn't see the Burnaby, the mountains on the other side. You know, I could see the whole landscape of mountains from way or Coquitlam, you know, right. And I can even see the bridge, landscape bridge from here through the trees, you know, when the leaves have dropped. In those days, you wouldn't see anything from end of September till about middle of May, unless there was a great wind. You wouldn't see the mountains.
Wow.
And the air stunk. Cars, you know, with the carbon.
No emission controls on the cars.
Oil burning, you know, and sawdust burners, coal burners, and all the furnaces that burnt oil. It stunk. This time of the year, it would get real bad about, you knew September was there because all of a sudden in the morning, you got look out the window and there was that stinky ozone, the smell of everything. And that was there till the winds come in the end of March. Yeah. It was, right now, it's sweet smelling now. I know the difference. Every time I go to the window, I expect to have that odor, but I says I could smell the sweet leaves, you know.
Now, I know that this area, too, crows congregate here these days. Were the crows always stopped by?
They weren't when I first come here, because every kid before that had a air rifle or .22, and there were no birds to speak of, other than the small songbirds, you know, there were lots of those. That morning, it was just deafening at the back of my place. But crows came back, and then it was for years. There was always a pair of crows here, and I wonder if they're the same crow or not. I know they're not the same, because one had a particular beak, he's gone, and now another one has taken over. And they'd raise their young, and at the end of May, they'd sort of fly around a little bit, and any other crow that was around, they'd chase it away. And then about a month later, they'd all congregate down in the park. So all the neighborhood crows, they have the territories, you know. And they'd congregate in the park there, and they'd come and visit, know each other, and then they'd fly back. And then later on in the summer, there'd be masses of crows flying from the east, and they'd head down. They used to always head down to near McDonald's on the boundary and Low Heat, and there was a big bluff of trees there, and that was cleared out for that movies. And then they moved over to, there was a scrap yard here right on Willingdon, and there was a big row of trees around that, you know, a bluff of trees around that, and they'd move in there, and clouds of them would come over, and then they'd, when it got dark, they'd head back home. So that was cleared out. Then they found another place by BCIT, and they'd all loan there, but there's not enough room for them. They like a bluff of trees. So where did they go? I haven't seen them. This is the first year. The crows in the backyard have not had any young. There have been no other crows around the neighborhood have any young, because none of them have come to the park. And this is the first time I've ever remembered that. So there's been a change. Why they don't have any young, I don't know. I have to ask George Clulow about that. He knows all about the birds in this area.